Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and I want to, again, welcome you in. And today, I think you're going to learn some good stuff. We have a fantastic guest. Not that any of our guests are not fantastic, but it's one of those things that as I go through and I'm reading up and catching up on our guests and on what they know and on what they do, I am really thankful to all of the guests that have been on, and today is no exception. My guest today is Brooke Lively. She is the CEO and founder of Cathedral Capital, a team of CFOs and profitability strategists who help entrepreneurs turn their businesses into profitable companies. After earning her MBA in investments and corporate finance, Brooke built a seven-figure company in under 2 years. That is quite an accomplishment, and congratulations on that, and welcome to the show, Brooke.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you are building something, and as you're building it, it built quickly. Is that a reflection on your work ethic? Is it a reflection on a strategy? What would you contribute your growth to?
You know, Rob, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think it's having a vision for what it is that you want to build. I think it's work ethic. You're an entrepreneur. People that start businesses tend to do it from a passion. So you don't see it so much as work, and you tend to do it more than 8 hours a day, and you keep going and you work on weekends and you don't really think about it because it's something you love.
Yeah.
And marketing.
It's an interesting thing because in looking back over the year that we've done, I mean, we started in, I think, April, as a result of the pandemic. I wanted to do a podcast, and what better time? Okay.
Absolutely.
And what I've been impressed by is the number of marketing experts that I've had on. And part of that is because this is something that, as an entrepreneur, it appeals to me. Listen, I'm in charge of booking the guests. I'm in charge of making sure I'm bringing in people, not only that my audience can learn from, but that I can learn from personally and how to grow my business. So it's marketing is right there. I find it interesting as well that you're talking about having a vision as to where you're going. That's got to be something that you either establish before you start your business or early on, I would imagine. Is that the case?
You know, I started my business by accident. I was running a family business. We had hired a consultant to help with sales. I have to say, sales and marketing, not my strength. And so we had hired him to help, and his clients started coming to me and saying, "Can you do for us what you're doing for your family?" And I didn't think a whole lot of it, but I mean, I was acting as a CFO. I was running everything by the numbers. And so I started this business because people asked me to. And as I started talking to more entrepreneurs, I realized that the financial part of the business is usually not people's passion. They didn't start a business to read a P&L. They started their business because they wanted to practice law or sell clothes or whatever it is that they have a passion about. And their insecurity around not understanding the financial aspects of their business really isolated them. And there was a lot of fear and self judgment around that. And that really struck a chord with me. I felt like that was so unfair, and it's not a business owner's fault that you don't know that. That wasn't why you started your business. And so that really became kind of that driving force, that why, to kind of eradicate that.
Okay. So I just had a light bulb moment while you were talking.
Oh, cool.
Yes. And that is, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, what you typically do is you start a business to do what you are passionate about. So your business does your passion. What you didn't start a business to do was what you find yourself doing, and that's running the business. So I'm sorry. Apparently I'm a little slow on the uptake, but in those terms, your business is your business is doing what you're passionate about, and then you get stuck doing the things that nobody really wants to do in order to support your business doing what you're passionate about. Is that?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And people are embarrassed about this. They don't enjoy it. They don't like it. And they don't feel knowledgeable about it. And they don't feel like they can reach out. So I had a client one time who owned a law firm, and it was growing like gangbusters. And businesses that grow are just cash monsters. Like, they eat cash. And we needed a line of credit. So I prepared his whole, you know, application packet. He goes to the bank, he meets with the bankers, blah, 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 blah. It all seems to be going well. And then they say, we need to see your pro formas.
Right.
Okay. He panicked. He leaves the meeting. He calls me and is just undone. My whole business is going to crater. I'm never going to be able to get the money I need. I need more space. I've got more clients that I can handle. If I don't get more space, if I don't get more inventory, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, hold on. What did they say? They need my pro formas. Blah, blah. I was like, no, 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 calm down. You know that budget we did for next year? Yeah. That's what they needed. They want your budget. So there was like this beat of silence. And then all of a sudden this string of expletives came out, which is so not like him.
Right.
And he's like, why didn't they just tell me that? I was like, well, they were speaking Baker. They weren't speaking normal human being kitchen table English.
Right.
And right. I was telling this story to a banker one time. And he said, well, why didn't he just ask? And I said, okay, if he had been in your room and you were talking about loaning him money and he said, what are pro formas, would you have loaned him any money? And he said, oh yeah, no, I wouldn't have had any confidence in him as a business person. I'm like, that's the crux of the problem.
Right.
They have questions and they are afraid that if they ask questions and show that they don't know something, in this case, it was just a term.
Right.
He had it.
Sure.
He had done it. He just didn't know the words. Like, it is awful. And it really undoes me that entrepreneurs face this.
You know, it's so funny. When I used to work for Disability Rights Pennsylvania, which is an advocacy and legal organization protecting the rights of people with disabilities. And I worked with a bunch of lawyers. And I will try and condense this story down as much as possible, but I got them a reenactment video from a deposition that was from Ohio, and the clerk of courts was charging people like $2 for every page that they were photocopying. And so in the deposition, they're deposing one of the employees, and they ask him if they have a photocopier. And he's like, can you tell me what that is? And he keeps asking, and the guy goes out, I'm like, are you really telling me you don't know what a photocopier is? And eventually he gets so mad and he's like, do you have a machine that you put a piece of paper into and you push a button and it makes a copy of that piece of paper and that other copy comes out the other end and now you have two copies of that piece of paper? Do you have such a machine? And the guy's like, well, yeah. And he says, well, what do you call that machine? He's like, oh, it's a Xerox machine.
It's a Xerox machine.
Right. But it's exactly what you're talking about, where in the course of that, he's like, you're trying to make me feel stupid. And he's like, I'm not trying to make you feel stupid. If you don't know what a photocopier is, you're making yourself feel stupid. But the point is that sometimes we get involved in situations where we're talking in a language and the words don't mesh, and what we know and what they know, and you don't want to look stupid. And as a matter of fact, what you said is so important that you're afraid that if you show any small crack in the armor, any small chink, that's going to be what does you in, and now you're done.
Absolutely. And so as a result, you live in fear, you question all your decisions that you're making, and you feel incredibly isolated and alone. And that, what I have found is, or what I love about entrepreneurs, is that when you can get them in a room where it's safe, they absolutely will will share, and they'll tell you what you need, and they will help each other. And that's an amazing thing. But it's creating that zone, that safe, and I hate this phrase, the safe place,
right?
But it's creating somewhere where they can share.
Sure. So, okay, we talked a little bit about the words and how the words can be intimidating, and sometimes we're talking two different vocabularies. But one of the things that you also talk about is numbers.
Okay. I do.
And you're talking about the numbers to look for in your business. Let's start there if you don't mind. And because very much in the same way that you have this panic where somebody says, like, hey, do you have a pro forma? And you're like,
yeah, pro formas.
I don't know. I don't think I do. There are also so many numbers in your business that you can look at. Can you help us focus on what are some of the most important numbers to look at to make sure that you're going in the right direction?
Absolutely. So somebody asked me one time, I was in a meeting, and they said, and I think this story has been used a lot in different books and things. If you were on a desert island at a 5-star resort and a mail boat comes once a week to drop off mail supplies and pick up and deposit guests, and you were staying there, what 3 pieces of information would you need that boat pilot to bring you on a piece of paper to let you know whether you could stay or not? And I was like, I don't know. And I'm a numbers girl, so like you would think I would know this. So my team and I have really worked on it over the years, and we've decided it's not 3 pieces of information, it's 6.
Okay.
And it's 6 pieces, it's 6 numbers in different parts of your business, and they tell you different things. Most of them are forward-looking, so they tell you what's going to happen in your business. And a couple of them let you get back on course.
Okay.
So here are the 6. I'm going to explain them really quickly. I'm going to use normal kitchen table English. I'm
Thank
not
you.
Going to talk about performance.
Right.
The first one is cash. So cash is king. Everybody knows that. And what we believe you should have is a cash flow forecast that tells you how much money you're going to have at the end of the week, every week for the next 6 weeks.
Okay.
It's that simple. How much money do you think you're going to get in? How much money do you think you're going to spend? And let's face it, Rob, I mean, the first and third week of the month is more expensive than any other month, because any other week, because you've got payroll and rent. Those
right.
are usually your 2 biggest expenses.
Sure.
So that lets you know 6 to 8 weeks in advance if you're going to have a problem.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
So let's do all the forward-looking ones first.
Okay.
Does that sound good? All
sure.
right. So the next one is the number of sales calls that are booked. So unless you're in like flat out retail or restaurant business, you have to sell your product or service. And if you track it, you know, of every sales call that comes in, how many clients come out the other end, right?
Right.
So that's going to tell you what's going to happen in your business. That's going to tell you if you need extra supplies, if you need to hire, how much pressure it's going to put on your team to produce whatever it is that you're selling. So you always want to look at your sales calls booked.
Got it. Do you know who David Newman is?
I don't know David Newman.
David Newman, he's a guy, he does Do It Marketing, and he talks about basically reverse engineering your sales calls. And so mm-hmm. he says, how many calls did you make? How many appointments did you book? How many clients did you sell? And so
exactly.
you basically then take that and you turn it backwards and you say, okay, so for every X number of calls I made, I booked 1 appointment. For every X number of appointments I made, I was able to make 1 sale. So then you just multiply it back out and you have yep. basically a formula that says you need to make X times X number of sales calls in order to make 1 sale.
And it's totally right. And one of the things you said is actually the next number. We call it net new engagements or net new cases or net new sales, whatever word works for you. And what that is knowing if your customer, client, project, whatever you want to call it, count is growing or shrinking. And why this is important and what goes into this is knowing about your average engagement. Just what you said, how much revenue does it bring in? How much pressure does it put on your people? Because that will tell you if you're growing or shrinking. It will also tell you what your revenue is going to look like over the next few weeks, months, right? Okay. Depending on how long an engagement lasts.
Sure.
The fourth number we will look at is work in progress. So most people understand this from a manufacturing point of view. You know, it's that car that's on the assembly line. But in professional services, in businesses like mine and like a lot of people's, we're not selling a product, we're selling a service. We still are doing work all month long before we bill it out at the end of the month. So tracking how much work you have, how many hours people have billed, where we are on projects, it's basically looking at what you're going to bill out next month, because your work in progress, the WIP, WIP, the WIP from this month is next month's revenue.
Got it.
There's nothing better than that moment that you look at a report that I promise you, any project software, any accounting software will give you, but that moment where you're like, I have more WIP than I have expenses next month. So everything from here on out's profit.
Got it. Yeah. Beautiful.
All right. Now, there are two numbers that help us get back on track.
Okay.
Okay. The first one is the budget versus actual report. And I have to say, we can't stand budgets. We don't like the word. It's awful. Entrepreneurs are about the possibility, not the prohibition. So, like, let's call it something else.
Okay.
Let's call it a profit plan, because that's what we're doing, right?
Okay.
We're not trying to just survive. We're not trying to limit what we're doing. We're trying to make a profit here. So let's plan for that profit. So every accounting software has a budget versus actual report. And what it does is it takes your P&L and puts right next to it your profit plan, otherwise known as a budget, and it compares them. Did we do what we thought we were going to do?
Right.
Are we on track or not?
Right. Okay. And I'll just stop you for one quick minute. P&L is your profit and loss statement, correct?
Yes. Sorry. Okay. Did I use the word? I used a word.
I come from the realm of, as I mentioned, I've got a background in disability advocacy. And so as we go through, and whenever anyone uses, abbreviations or whatever, I'm just making sure that we're all talking the same language.
It's your profit and loss statement. Some people call it an income statement. And all it is a list of all the money you got in minus all the money you spent to tell you how much profit you made.
Right.
And it's a great report. But again, when you look at that next to your profit plan, next to your budget, were we ahead or behind? Were we ahead for a good reason? Let's figure out what that was so we can repeat it. Were we behind? What was it? Did we not pick up the phone and start enough? Did we not make enough cold calls?
Right.
Right. Were we over on an expense for a good reason or a bad reason?
Sure. It makes sense.
And it lets you get back on track.
Got it. I love it. And then do we have one more number?
We have one more number. Okay. So the last number is owner benefit. And we have put this in there because at the end of the day, as much as we start a business because we're passionate about something, we don't start a business as charity, right? I mean,
right.
We need to get something out of this.
Sure.
We need to profit. We need to benefit. And benefit, let me be clear, benefiting is not always about cash.
Okay.
Sometimes we benefit in the way we get to live our lives. So, working less, having more balance, being able to work remote. There are all kinds of benefits. But in this case, we are talking about monetary benefits.
Sure.
And we believe that you should run any business on the rule of thirds. One third of net revenue goes to the people doing the work. One third goes to overhead, and one third should go to the owner.
Okay.
And again, this is something that lets you see if you're on track at the end of end of the month.
Sure.
Is your, or did you spend more on people? If so, why? Is there anything you can do about that? Are you getting, as the owner, what you need out of this company? Because if you're not, you're going to have to get on the boat and leave because you can't afford to stay on that island another week.
Right. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So my wife is a genius, and she had our kids grow up watching the Food Network. And so my kids all love to cook. But one of the shows that is on Food Network is Restaurant Impossible. And I can't tell you how many episodes of that you watch. And the owner, the restaurant is not doing well. And the owner is saying, I have not taken a paycheck in months or years even. And that's that owner benefit is, it's why the business exists. And it's incredible that what you're talking about. Yeah, in some ways, the flexibility and being able to work with who you want to work with and when you want to work and do those things is something. But at the end
it's
of the
great.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, if you're working and you're not getting paid for it, it's a form of I don't want to, servitude somehow. I don't want to be
labor.
Right.
Well, the thing is that it wears you down as the owner.
Right.
And let's take Restaurant Impossible. If you look at those owners that he's working with, they are so demoralized. They have done everything. They have started cutting corners. They say it's a fresh crab cake and he takes one bite and knows that it's been frozen for months, if not years.
Right.
You can tell. And they're just defeated. And that goes back to how I feel about entrepreneurs and their isolation and their fear. And I just can't stand it. I can't stand people feeling that way, because being an entrepreneur, owning your own business, should be about freedom.
Yeah.
It should be about really exercising your abilities.
Yeah, one of the things that comes up often enough is that concept of imposter syndrome, right? Where you feel like, everybody else who's doing this is so much better at it than I am. And, I look around and nobody seems to be having the issues that I am. And you're afraid to speak up and say, either what does this mean? Or has anyone else experienced this? Or whatever the situation is. And you end up in, like you said, you end up in a very lonely and isolated place where you are feeling like no one else has the problems that you have. No one else faces the issues that you have, and everyone else is somehow privy to information that you don't have.
Yeah. They can do it. They're soaring. They're doing this great thing, and I'm a failure. And you're not a failure, because I got to tell you, they're feeling the same thing too.
Right.
And that's why finding a community of entrepreneurs is so important. And there are a number of them out there. You can find them. They're called masterminds, where right. you get a group together and you can really talk. An organization that I love is EO, Entrepreneurs Organization. And it is built around that. It's built around giving you a community of people that are going through the same things so that you can share and not feel so alone.
Sure. I love it. So I will see if I can get the links for those and include those in the show notes, just to make sure that people have those as a resource. So now you take all of what you've done, you've got the numbers, and then you build a company out of this, and you're doing Cathedral Capital. Tell me a little bit about, like, who do you have on your team for resources, or how does that work?
So there are about 10 of us now. Okay. Doing various things. But here's what it boils down to. I'm going to talk in terms of mountains, because that's part of our logo, because I had an experience when I started my company. I went on this hike. It was supposed to be a medium level hike. Not true. It kicked my tushy.
Right.
And I never made it to the top.
Okay.
And the next time I went with my sister, who was a very experienced hiker. She had done the hike a number of times. She knew exactly what was going to happen. She knew how to push me, pull me, how to motivate me to get up. And I made it to the top. And I realized no one climbs a mountain alone.
Mm.
If you think about Sir whatever, whoever climbed Mount Everest first,
Sir Edmund Hillary.
Edmund Hillary, there you go. All of a sudden I was having a mind blank.
It's okay.
He did not climb the mountain by himself. He had a Sherpa named Tenzing Norgay. You'll see Tenzing's name. I totally identify with him. Him, I can
Got it.
remember.
Right.
So, and it was his job to plan ahead, to know what was coming up, to be prepared, to help Sir Edmund Hillary and give him the knowledge he needed to get to the top. I think of us as financial Sherpas. It is our job to walk beside the entrepreneurs, to give them the knowledge that they need, to teach them how to reach the top of the mountain, to warn them when things are coming up. Most small businesses can't afford to have a full-time CFO.
Right.
$150,000 salary is just going to sink your company.
Sure.
And even if you could afford it, many times they don't have enough to do. So what we do is we come in and we serve as that financial team, whether it's giving you the strategic advice that a CFO gives you, or unraveling and untangling your books, or connecting your technology to your financial statements so that information runs seamlessly. Like that's what we're here to do. We're here to stand beside you and help you to the top of your mountain.
I love it. And I mean, the fact is that the Sherpas are the ones that have the knowledge that the, like Sir Edmund Hillary, he had the desire to go to the top, but left to his
And he
own.
got the
Oh yeah. Which it's so interesting. I saw a commencement speech from Arnold Schwarzenegger, who talks about the fact that he's not a self-made man. Nobody is actually a self-made individual. All of us have people whose shoulders we stand on. All of us have people who have reached out a hand and pulled us up. And we all have someone to be grateful for. And in that, it's a reminder, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask for help. And maybe the banker is not the person to ask when they're asking, like, do you have a pro forma? But getting out of that situation and finding someone where, sorry to use the buzzword that you hate, you have a safe place and you're able to ask somebody, what in the world is a pro forma and how do I either get one or do I have one already and I didn't even realize it? So,
And that was such an easy solution in that case. He
absolutely.
had it. And I think that there are a lot of business owners that have great instincts and just need someone to say, yes, I agree with you. And here's the data that explains why.
Perfect. Good. Brooke, you have been full of information, and I really appreciate you being on. If people are looking to get a hold of you, what's your website or what's the easiest place to find you?
Okay, so our website is cathcap.com. CathCap. We couldn't get Cathedral Capital, so we went with CathCap. And it's now become the nickname of our company. So cathcap.com.
Okay.
There's contact us pages. Our phone number is probably on there. You can get us. We've got a ton of free resources, especially actually about if you have questions about the CARES Act and anything with the pandemic.
Sure.
We've got a whole pandemic section on there.
Excellent. Cool. Well, I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. And you have, like I said, you gave us a lot of great information. I think the six numbers are something that we all, as small business owners, as entrepreneurs, as bit, I think any business can benefit from taking a look at those. And I appreciate you sharing them.
And they're pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
They weren't big, intimidating, scary things that I don't understand.
Yeah, and you didn't use any words that I didn't understand, and it all made sense. So thank you. We have reached the time for three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for these?
Yes. Are they going to be hard?
No. What is the last adventure that you had?
Okay, so I think the last adventure I had, I have two young nephews, so I try to have adventures with them. But I think the last one was really last January when I was able to go to Europe with friends. I had a major milestone birthday. And
29, I assume.
yes, 29 again. And it was eight friends that went, and the camaraderie and the exploration and being able to be together and learn about new cultures was an amazing adventure.
Very cool. It sounds like it would be a lot of fun. What is something that your friends or coworkers would say is so you? They would say, "Oh, that is so Brooke."
Let's see. Probably control freak is not the thing to go with here, though I think they would all say that.
Nice.
I am very non-judgmental. I'm non-judgmental with my friends. I'm non-judgmental with our clients. We all make the best decisions we can at the time. In hindsight, was that really the best thing? Probably not. But with the information you have at any given moment, you do the best you can. And understanding that about people and giving them the grace is a great gift.
That's awesome. Okay, so you brought up the five-star resort that you're getting to stay at, and if Brooke Lively is creating the menu for this is my five-star meal, what is on the menu for Brooke's five-star meal?
Oh, that's hard because part of me wants to say like yummy comfort food, pasta. And the other part of me is like, dude, I love lamb.
Okay.
So let's go with lamb.
Okay.
And I had the other night, I literally just 2 nights ago had fried artichokes that were one of the most divine things I've ever had.
Nice. I've never had those.
Oh my gosh, I had neither. All day, every day, I could eat that.
Yeah.
And for an appetizer, I would do stuffed squash blossoms. I was in a restaurant in Italy that was owned by some prince or some duke or something,
Okay.
and they had these stuffed squash blossoms that I have dreamt about ever since.
What did they stuff them with?
Like cheese.
Okay.
And they kind of like flash fried them or something. I don't know. Oh, so good.
Nice. And so for dessert?
Dessert, probably something fruit-based. So a fruit tart, a fruit cake, a baked fruit. I love fruit desserts. Or oh, a lemon something.
There you go. That works. Brooke, thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate you being on today, and your knowledge has been something that we've all benefited from. To all my listeners, thank you for being with us today. Again, I would encourage you subscribe, get us on Apple Podcasts, and make sure that you don't miss an episode. And I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.